Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Thank you so much for staying with us. I promised you a book feature. We would not do this day without having a book feature. So we have the company of Griffin Scher, who owns Bridge Books. If you're in London, Bridge Books is there, but there are other many places where you can get hold of them as well, online and so on. But Griffin, thanks for coming in. Hello.
Yeah, thank you so much. Good to see you.
Okay, so you have the most interesting selection today, I have to tell you, especially the very first book. The book is called The Trees. Immediately I thought of the song. What's it called? Is it Nina Simone? It's called...
Oh, The Strange Fruit.
Absolutely. Mm. That was exactly the song I thought of.
So, a very dear friend recommended this book to me about a month ago, and she said, it's a comedy about lynchings. And I thought, oh,
it
no.
Is. It is, because, and I think people are not quite going to get it, but you, I don't know if you have to be black to find it funny. I don't know, but it's more funny if you're black.
Possibly. I think the white characters are also like a white minstrel show almost, because they are such
Absolutely.
Huge caricatures.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's
caricatures,
is yes.
dark and hilarious.
It is.
If you have a certain kind of sense of humor, I would.
Yes.
But it's almost...
It's revenge fantasy.
Revenge fantasy and playing on like the tropes of the detective story and the tropes of the FBI going to the small town of Mississippi and what should happen.
Yeah. So it's funny. I'll tell you. And let's premise it this way. Not everyone's going to find it funny. And not everyone, it's not for everybody. This book is not for everybody.
And it's also imagining... Yeah, so it's not, I think, giving away too much, because the spoilers could be a lot with this one. But at the very beginning, you realize, it's set in contemporary times in the first Trump presidency.
Yes.
But it's
Which
dealing,
is in itself quite funny.
Yes.
Yes.
And he has some lines where he's kind of mocking Trump, and you realize, like, oh, it could such easily have been a real speech.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so on the nose, the dialogue and all these things. But that is kind of dealing with the legacy of Emmett Till, who was a 14-year-old boy lynched in the 60s in Mississippi, and sort of what happens with justice and how do we think about it, and then what happens when you open that can.
You know, I know we're not supposed to give away too much, but I have to just give this little bit, because I think that's really funny. The fact that there are murders in this town. So the town is just racist everywhere. American racist, terrible. And there are murders in this town. But what I think obviously is funny is that part of what happens with these murders is that there is a murder and then there's a black corpse that shows up. And of course, then you follow the story. But every time there's a murder, there's this black corpse that's right next to the murdered body.
Which then disappears.
Exactly.
And then reappears. And then you start to wonder,
what's going
are
on?
There zombies? What happened to this corpse? And the way the characters play out, and there's two black detectives from Mississippi and a black FBI agent who comes through investigating all these, and eventually these crimes end up going all over the country.
Of course.
And there's just, some of it is so funny,
it's
the way
funny.
That the dialogue works, the way that they kind of stop at the diner, but then it turns out the diner might have like a secret ninja who's working there too. And it's such an unlikely, it sounds ridiculous when you try to explain it. And once you get into it, it doesn't take very long. It's a very like lovely kind of read for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I did laugh out loud. I mean, and it feels horrible saying it.
Exactly, because the thought of someone who was lynched in 1955 coming back to haunt a town of a racist, white, KK kind of Ku Klux Klan kind of people, I think it's funny. It's hilarious that he just comes and he terrorizes community.
I mean, there's a scene where the Klan tries to organize a new rally and they're all so incompetent and inept and kind of the buffoonery around trying to organize this Klan rally, which on the one hand is such a great way of poking fun at like how
horrible
it is too. and that the whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And also, but, you know, it's raising like a really serious question about, well, what do we do with this legacy that's never really been addressed?
Yeah.
And I kind of have enjoyed that it's not a finger wagging book. It's not a like, you know, it's really,
and I mean, in a way, it also does a lot of things. You spoke about justice, right? When you think of the kind of times that this corpse may have lived at, this corpse may have lived at a time when people went to a picnic, you know, to watch lynchings of black people. Children, families would take picnic baskets to, it's like a show. It was a show.
And there's a granny in the town, a black granny, who took it upon herself to document every lynching case in the United States ever, beginning with her own father. Mm. And one of the scenes is, there's this researcher who comes from Chicago and gets introduced to this woman. He's like, oh my God, like, how did you document it? And then he decides to write out the names when they're known, because a lot of the names were unknown, of every single person. And it took him, you know, he was up all night and his fingers were falling off because he was just so tired of writing it. And to be honest, like, those parts of it, I also, I think I don't ever think of it the scale of it, and that it went on for so many decades. And that if there was a revenge for each one of those, how many people would be taken out?
This is it. And the point of it is there was no justice for those people. You know, people got away with, slave masters got away with just murdering people.
And I guess the other thing I learned that I really did not know was how many people of other races were lynched.
Yes.
That there were lynchings against Asian Americans, Native Americans, and that it was such a widespread thing. Is in my mind, it's very much a you know, a legacy of the South, but that in all kinds of other parts of the country, it was happening. And as in the book, as it spirals out, you just start to realize like how much it's like woven into the fabric of very recent history.
Yes,
and it's actually not. It's people who are still alive today. Carrying that in their bones.
And what it was trying to do in trying to, that display had lots of intention behind it. The display was to tell you, those who are witnessing it and watching, that, you know, you better stay in your lane, kind of thing. You know, this is what we do to your ilk, and so on. So it was quite the publicity of it all. Had a lot of meaning behind it. And I think there is a lot of, when we look at what's happening today, to your point, you can see how that society is still dealing with a lot of those wounds.
And I think in the way that the murders are staged, and the contemporary murders of the white people are staged in the book, it's also that about like making a scene, having this corpse move around, and kind of generating a controversy.
Yep.
And as it spirals out, you do sort of wonder, like, are they zombies? Are there copycats? Yeah. Are there all these different ways that this could be going about? But just a very unlikely book that works so well. Like, just such a pleasure to read.
Yeah. And then you've got your other book. Your next book is The Parable of the Sower series. Octavia Butler.
Maybe it's me wrapping my mind around where we are with Trump now.
My goodness.
It's very much about that, I think.
Yes, it is. It's very current. It's very good for this time.
And it's amazing how prescient it is. So the first one, The Parable of the Sower,
it's eerily very familiar.
Came out in 93.
Yeah.
And some of it also living in South Africa, I think we identify because it's people living in these heavily fortified, gated communities, scared of the outside world coming in. And I think especially after the fires in Los Angeles, it's set in a Los Angeles that is, you know, on the brink of destruction from climate change, from civil
unrest.
And
after the fires in L.A.?
Exactly. Yeah, you feel all of these
very
things.
Very similar.
And the main character is this woman, Lauren, whose mother was a drug user, and it left her with this ability to feel the physical pain of people around her.
Mm.
So her level of empathy is physical as well. So if you stub your toe, she feels like her toe has been stubbed. Mm. And all the way up, if you get shot, she feels like she's been shot and can't move. And she's been raised in this relatively like secluded, kind of a gated suburb, basically, that's very self-sufficient, but they don't have many resources because the country has fallen apart and they're at war with Canada, which also feels like just from the headlines this week.
This is eerily very familiar.
So they're making flour from acorns and doing a lot of indigenous gardening to try and figure out how to survive, but still living, you know, a relatively normal suburban life in this tiny bubble. And then her brother sneaks out because he's, you know, as teenagers are wont to do, he wants to go out and see what's going on and not listen to his parents. Ends up getting abducted by a gang who then comes in and ravages the community. She sets out with this group of people to try and find some new place to settle. But she's been writing this journal where she is creating this like new religion. And she's imagining, again, it's very weird, the way that it lines up in unlikely ways, but that humanity's destiny is to live on the stars and that we need to be settling other planets, which just makes me think of Elon as well, but in a different twist. And she's got this whole idea that God is change, and it's sort of her idea is that we can either embrace change and that it's always coming for us and try and steer the change, or we sort of get trampled by it. Mm. And that God is all-powerful and God is everywhere, and that change is all-powerful and change is everywhere. And it was very much like a post-apocalyptic sort of sci-fi novel, but it's not sci-fi like Aliens and Lasers. It's more speculative fiction and more in the vein of a Margaret Atwood kind of Handmaid's Tale. And I'd read Kindred and some of her other books before, and this one felt too heavy, so I had kind of put it off for a long time, but this felt like the right time to sort of think about, gosh, so 30 years ago she was having these very clear ideas about how things could go wrong.
It's eerily very familiar, and the themes there are just exactly the kinds of things that we want to discuss right now.
And the level, there's sort of a state capture theme to it, where like corporations are taking over and managing
everything.
What
we're seeing right now in the US,
it just feels very,
the dangers of unchecked power, all of that is in there. The media, all of that is in there.
And the kind of, and I guess speaking to the trees as well, that the legacy of the past is not that far behind us, and the risk that people lapse into the ways of history, because in these books, like, slavery has resumed, basically as punishment for not paying your debts kind of things. The violence against women that is, you know, becomes very horrific again. And at the same time, this idea of self-sufficiency, and there's a path, and we can migrate and find a new way to settle. And it's just a very, it's not a negative book in the sense that it's not depressing when you finish it, because there is a silver lining. It's sort of like, how do you deal with the reality that we have, which I think is the question that I have been asking myself every morning when I look at the news.
Yeah. So. But I mean, this is also a very important author, just to lift her a little bit from this particular novel, in the sense that she is a science fiction writer who has very intentionally placed Black women in her stories, one of a kind. And that in itself is quite important.
And the feeling she was kind of rediscovered in the last decade or so.
Yes.
She died quite some time ago.
Yeah.
And this series of books, she finished the two. The rest, she had planned a whole long series that, you know, there's in her archives, you can see the kind of starts that she had made on different versions of the next books to come, but that were never done. I think, like with Kindred, for example, it was such like an eye-opening sci-fi book, which was adapted on Amazon. People may have seen on the TV version. But it's a Black woman who gets transported into the time of slavery from modern times. And it's not kind of a, the magic of however she gets transported is never really dealt with or explained, and it's not important. Like, what's interesting is how she's engaging with the situation that she finds herself in. And so I think it's a lot about how to perceive the future, to perceive the past, but definitely centering Black women in the middle of it. And it gives you just a different, it makes you realize how sci-fi tends to be a very narrow lane that people are in.
Yeah.
And she did so much to broaden it out, and that it wasn't recognized for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I think it's amazing that the books are being rediscovered in this way, getting a new audience, kind of spreading out again. And I feel like the parable of the sower and the parable of the talents definitely is a moment right now for people to connect with.
So the author is called Octavia Butler. That's who we've just been speaking about. And it's a series. And unfortunately, as you said, you know, this it ends at two. But we'll give you the list now. We've only got time for one more, I think. You dreamed of empire.
So I don't know what's going on in my mind, because it's a little bit like The Trees, yes, in the sense that it's this kind of colonial revenge fantasy. And also hilarious, if you have a very dark sense of humor.
Yeah.
Imagining when Cortez arrived in Tenochtitlan to meet Montezuma for the first time, and kind of the absurdity of these chances of history where these dirty, smelly Spanish people rock up to this beautiful city that's kind of floating on water almost, and like smells of flowers, and everyone's studded up, and meeting each other, and all of the, of course, miscommunication that happens because there is an interpreter, but they're not very good. The way the Catholic priests perceive the Aztec priest, they get invited to these kind of hilarious dinners where no one knows what's going
on.
The Spanish have no table manners for the Aztec royal court. And there's a lot of, you realize the emperor is stoned through most of the book because he's taking magic mushrooms. Mm. So part of it is his fantasies around, you know, what's happening. But it's also a revenge fantasy, imagining like, well, what if it went a different way?
Mm.
So the beginning of it does align, like they did arrive, and then Tenochtitlan became Mexico City after Cortez took it over.
Yes.
It's a little bit tricky to read, I would say, because they're using non-standard spellings for a lot of the names. So it took me a minute to, like,
get it,
figure out who we were talking about, because they are real historic personages. But he did that on purpose because the writer is from Mexico City and was like, you know, this is the history of my own city that I don't know because we built it on top of the ruins of the Aztec city. And he wanted the readers to have to think about the story that we think that we know.
Mm.
And by changing the spellings and using a slightly different variation was one way to do it. But it's also, there's like palace intrigue and people running around the courts through back alleys, having love affairs, you know, being chaotic. It's very funny,
funny
at the end. It's sort of a big proposition of like, well, what if it went a different way? Which is fun to imagine.
Again, where do people find you, your beautiful books, and where is Bridge Books?
So we're in Linden, and then we have our shop in town is thriving now at the Barbican, and we'll be doing our big children's lit festival on Saturday morning in town. So from 10 o'clock, come by. The Gruffalo will be there. We'll be doing the Gruffalo in, I think, 5 South African languages. And getting people signed up for library cards, because the library should be reopening this month.
Yes.
So we want people to be using it and celebrating it as soon as the doors open.
Yeah. All right. Let's go through those books again, Griffin.
So it's The Trees by Percival Everett. That's the Emmett Till one. And The Parable of the Sower and The Parable of the Talents by Octavia Butler. Mm-hmm. And You Dreamed of Empires is the Mexican book by Alvaro Enrique.
Griffin Scher, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you.
So, guys, that's it. We'll put the list of names of the names of the authors as well as the books themselves online. And then you can also go to our podcast as well, just to get a taste of what it is that we discussed. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.